This is Sunday, October 25th, 1998. I'm in Buffalo, New York. This is Thomas A. Scott, and I'm doing an interview with William G. Giesel, who is the former president of the Bell Aircraft Corporation. The interview is being conducted at Mr. Giesel's home. Mr. Hugh Neeson of Lockheed Martin is also participating in the interview. Well, Mr. Giesel, why don't we start by just giving a little bit of background information on you of when you were born and where you were born and things like that, and then we'll talk about how you got into the aircraft industry.
Well, I was born March 9th, 1916, which makes me 82 years old, mm-hmm. going on 83. Mm-hmm. I was born in Jamestown, New York, and went to school in Jamestown and later to college at both Miami universities.
Oh, really?
Which University of Miami in Florida and Miami University in Ohio. Uh-huh. And I graduated from Miami University in Ohio.
Did you really?
With a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration.
Oh, okay. How did you get down to Miami, the one in Florida?
On a scholarship.
Really?
And during that era, money was rather important.
Yeah.
So I had a scholarship and went down and spent 2 years. Uh-huh. And play golf most of the time.
What kind of a scholarship?
I didn't learn very much.
What kind of a scholarship was it? An academic or?
No, an athletic.
Athletic?
Mm-hmm.
For football?
Yeah. No.
For golf?
Golf. Basketball. And
for
golf.
Basketball? Mm-hmm.
So, after a couple of years, my mother and father felt that I was not getting a proper education. So they said, you cannot go back to Florida.
Hmm.
So I began to look around rather late in the season to find out where to go.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine was going to Miami University in Oxford, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I ended up.
Hmm. You still play basketball then?
No, I didn't do anything except study.
Uh-huh.
And I had to make up 4 years in 2 years.
Right.
Which I didn't. So, anyway, after graduation, I was employed by Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company.
Uh-huh.
As an auditor, which
mm-hmm.
was not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I left that and went to back to Jamestown and went in the Bank of Jamestown
mm-hmm.
as a pretty much a trainee.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine from Buffalo by the name of Dick McKee,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the originals that was hired by Larry Bell back in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a very heavy affection for a girl in Jamestown, so I saw quite a bit of him. Anyway, he prevailed on me to come to work for Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And after some deliberation, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very nominal salary of 55 cents an hour.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What was your job?
And I was I was a cashier.
Uh-huh.
The initial assignment cashier.
Mm-hmm.
And after a short period of time, I moved up in the accounting department,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
particularly in the payroll, and ended up in charge of all the payroll activity
mm-hmm.
for, at that time, about 35,000 people,
mm-hmm.
which was a major job.
Mm-hmm. What? By this time, we're into World War II, obviously.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What year did you go to work for Bell?
1940.
So you started there when there were still only about 1,000 employees.
Less than 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, there were about 400 or 500.
Uh-huh.
And we had a rapid expansion
mm-hmm.
after the 40 period.
Mm-hmm.
The not only physical plants, but people.
Mm-hmm.
And as the plant grew, I moved up in the accounting department. I became a chief accountant, then
mm-hmm.
I was controller.
Mm-hmm.
And at about that time in 41 and 42, when the B-29 activity started in Georgia. I went down to Marietta and spent about 2 or 3 months in Marietta setting up the payroll department. Then I would go back quite frequently, come back here and then go back.
Yeah.
But it was way long enough, so I lost my apartment up here. I had an apartment on Allen Street, and the landlady thought I was never coming back, so she just took all my stuff and threw it away. I came back, I had nothing. Anyway, it was an interesting experience going back and forth to Georgia. And that's where I met my wife, and she was secretary to the general manager, Captain Collins. And she was the number one employee. I'll have her come down and testify.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we'd like to have her down. Of course, yeah.
Right.
She was, and then Captain Collins was moved from Georgia to Washington. And
So Kay stays and Collins goes, is that?
No, well, he prevailed on her to go to Washington with him.
Did he?
Provided she could leave if she wanted to go home. If she wanted to. she went to Washington, and I would see her in Washington, and I said, finally, I have you on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line. Now we can talk serious. So, anyway, we were married in November 44. No, excuse me, March 44.
All right.
And after that, I spent most of my time up here. You know, from that point. When did you come?
55.
55. And I spent most of my time in the financial area, and then I became secretary and treasurer of the company, and gradually moved up.
Right. What year did, is about 1960 that you became president?
I can give you my resume.
All right, great.
It'll be easier.
Great. So you went to Georgia about, what?
42, I think.
40, yeah, would have been 42, when they're still, when they're just beginning to build the plant. And so you were there all that year while the plant was under construction, and been there for about a year after they actually started building planes there before you came back.
I was there in 42 and 43, and some in 44, but after that I was pretty much up here.
Right. Well, I guess since you had been to Miami, it wasn't a total culture shock.
No.
To
no. No, it wasn't. Well, except I found that, you know, there are a lot of traditions during that period. And Captain Collins, who was running the plant, found that out, too. He was formerly under Roosevelt.
Yeah, I believe that's working better.
He knows how to fix things.
Yeah, as long as we keep it on its side, we're all right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you were beginning to talk about the traditions.
Yeah. We found that taking and building a plant that size with a number of people involved, that they were farmers or cotton farmers and things like that, and they were not used to regimentation as far as punching your time card, or then there was a serious question about the blacks being educated and not eating in the same area with the whites, and it was quite a problem at that time to educate the people to get involved in a big industrial effort, and it took a lot of time and effort in that era, and we did spend, and I think we did a good job in in training people, and
you have a lot of tardiness of people showing up for work.
But they just weren't used to it, and although it was improved as we went along, but It was a very interesting assignment.
Mm-hmm. What did you do if somebody's late for work? Do you doctor pay, or how did
Well, they had a time card, and it was recorded on that time card. Mm-hmm. And if they were there 4 hours, they got paid 4 hours. If they're there 10 minutes, they got paid 10 minutes.
Okay.
It was purely by recording on a time card.
Mm-hmm. So they punch in and punch out, and was that had to be a shock to people who had come off of a farm.
That's
themselves.
Right. They aren't used to it.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, it was a very new process of training people mm-hmm. to the industrial way of life,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them didn't understand. It took mm-hmm. a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to dismiss any significant number of workers because they just couldn't get with an industrial schedule?
As I recall, it wasn't that big a problem.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting thing, we hired all these midgets, which is in that book,
uh-huh.
Because to the confined area in the final assembly, and they mm-hmm. had to have midgets go in there and do the work,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think... the personnel was the biggest problem
uh-huh.
in getting started.
Right.
And once you, and then we had a great training program.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was so enthusiastic about the effort that mm-hmm. there wasn't any
mm-hmm.
real,
patriotic duty.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Really, right. No problem.
Say a little bit about the training program.
As I recall, we hired some professional educators or mm-hmm. trainers,
right?
And we would have classes, mm-hmm. and they would divide the classes into various skills and mm-hmm. elements of the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
Some were involved in inspection, some were in final assembly, mm-hmm. some in flight test. It was broken down by their assignments, and I think one person who and I can't remember his name right now. He headed up the whole training program and did a marvelous job.
So this is training in the plant people were already
hired. Right, after they were hired, we trained them.
Right. And then there were a number of training schools out in the community to prepare people to go to work at the plant,
That's
too.
Right, right. As a matter of fact, you're talking about Vicki Chastain.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Her father was in purchasing.
Uh-huh.
At Bell,
mm-hmm.
and we brought him up here in Buffalo for X number of months to train him mm-hmm. in how we handle our purchasing department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His name was John Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vicki Chastain was mayor.
She was a mayor. She ended up being mayor.
Yes, she served on the city council a number mm-hmm. of years, and then she was mayor for 4 or 8 mm-hmm. years. I can't remember how long.
She's
she was,
quite a fireball.
1 or 2 terms. And still is very active in the community.
Well, I didn't see her when we were done, but
really?
I gather she would be.
Well, she's been on the board of the Georgia Trust
mm-hmm.
for Historic Preservation.
Oh, yeah.
She's done a number of things still in the community. Not as active as when she was in politics, I guess, but still active in the community. You were talking about problems with race relations.
Mm-hmm.
The plant. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, actually, it was for the people that came from the north, it was to get used to the mm-hmm. situation. And there was a very decided effort on the part of Captain Collins and the executive staff
mm-hmm.
to work out these relations.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with the NCA, what is it?
NAACP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And work with them, and it worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
We really never had any serious problem, but it was something you had to do.
Right.
And it was faced properly, and it was well done.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were the number of blacks that were employed at Bell would be probably a little bit less than the percentage of blacks that you would have in Marietta and Cobb County at that time, but there still were a significant number. I think at the peak there were maybe 1,700 or 1,800 blacks mm-hmm. working at the
mostly plant. In unskilled mm-hmm. jobs.
Mm-hmm. I've gone through the records of the Fair Employment Practices mm-hmm. Committee.
Well, you probably know more about it.
Well, there were a number of complaints, but the FEPC didn't really have any power, it didn't appear, to enforce anything. They just tried to negotiate with the management to improve things. We've got one interview with a black lady that worked at Bell Aircraft, and her job was a pretty minor job, but it paid so much more than she had ever made before
true.
That she had very positive memories. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to at least one other black woman that worked there, too, mm-hmm. that had very positive memories. Of
I don't think you'd find anybody that had any negative.
Mm-hmm.
There were some, you know, once in a while there would be a problem, but it was all resolved.
Uh-huh.
Never had any problem. We had more problems up here with our labor unions.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a union that was voted in at the plant, wasn't there,
mm-hmm.
during the war?
As I recall.
How did that, was that while you were still there? Or after
no, I don't think that was after I was there.
Mm-hmm. Was,
it may have started while I was there, but I don't recall specifically.
Obviously, labor unions are not as strong in the South as mm-hmm. in the North. Did you have any labor troubles at all that you can remember while you were there?
None.
Okay.
No.
Apparently, there were some minor ones toward the end after you had left.
Well, that's when they were talking about closing the plant.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. What about Captain Collins? Do you did you work closely with him?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Collins?
I thought he was a tremendous man.
Did you?
He was very political oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And knew FDR very well.
Mm-hmm.
And he very fair.
Mm-hmm.
And very very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
He was an aristocratic type person.
Mm-hmm.
And very knowledgeable. I would say that Larry Bell put him in there to get things started,
mm-hmm.
get it on the right foot. Then he put a professional general manager in, Woodson,
mm-hmm.
who took over, and mm-hmm. he ran the plant. Collins was not a manufacturing man. He was more a person to get it started properly.
Mm-hmm. Because of his political connection?
Well, political and also his personality
was mm-hmm.
conducive to that type
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I guess, really where I was kind of heading with these questions is that I kind of get the impression from secondary sources that that Larry Bell may have lost confidence in Collins at a certain point for this particular job and decided he wanted somebody else to actually run the plant.
I think that's probably true, but I don't think he lost confidence in him. I think he was aware of the fact that his capabilities and his function had been performed properly at the
mm-hmm.
beginning,
mm-hmm.
and now that they were in a manufacturing
mm-hmm.
stage,
mm-hmm.
that somebody else could do a better job,
mm-hmm.
plus the fact he needed somebody in Washington,
mm-hmm.
and that's where he moved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
for the politics of
for the contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Was he like the head of Washington operations?
Oh, yeah. He headed up. That's where Kay was.
Mm-hmm. I see.
She was a secretary for him in mm-hmm. Washington.
You call him captain. I mean, was he retired?
He was a captain in the Navy.
Was he retired at that time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about Woodson, Omer Woodson?
He was a great guy.
Was he?
Yeah, very capable.
Mm-hmm.
He understood the manufacturing process. He was well-disciplined in his
mm-hmm.
thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
He recognized the organization
mm-hmm.
and people.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he hired Culver,
mm-hmm.
and that's an interesting story. The day of our wedding, we were married in Marietta,
mm-hmm.
and went to New York City. And when we got to New York City, we found that Culver and Max Stupar,
right,
were on his airplane going into Dayton, crashed and killed. Both of them were killed.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was November of 44.
You're right. My wedding is November.
You were married in November.
Yeah, November 25th. Okay.
November 25th?
Yes.
Right.
Sorry.
About Thanksgiving.
Yes, it was November 25th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We better get that straight before Casey's drinks.
You can say that again.
Okay, so, all right.
Yeah, that was November. As a matter of fact, we bumped into somebody in New York and told us about it. And John Barry, who was the financial vice president of finance, he was supposed to have been on that plane, but for some reason didn't go, and he was saved.
Mm-hmm.
But Culver was a former Air Force type.
Right.
It was a great loss, actually, when they lost Culver and Stupar. Stupar was a planner. He was in the planning department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was his background?
Stupar?
Stupar? Sounds like a German.
I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all I know, he was well respected.
Right. Well, I think Jimmy Carmichael was supposed to have been on the plane too.
And yes, that's right.
Then Larry Bell asked him to ride the train up instead.
Right, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jimmy Carmichael and Kay were good friends.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. I guess so. They would. Jimmy Carmichael was born in 1912, so.
Well, she's a little 15, 3 years different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they would have went, and Carmichael was a year behind in school after his accident. So.
That's true.
So, yeah.
As a matter of fact, we had dinner with Jimmy Carmichael the night that, what's his name was assassinated?
Kennedy?
Kennedy?
No.
Luther King?
The black guy.
Luther King?
King. And we were at the club in...
Country Club?
No, it was the driving club.
Mm. Oh, Piedmont?
Yeah, Piedmont Driving Club. Mm-hmm. And Carmichael was with us, and I forgot who. Oh, we had some military, because the Air Force had an association meeting there. Anyway, I always remember that, because that was the last time I saw Jimmy Carmichael.
Mm. What was the reaction to the King?
You know, it was nobody even raised an eyebrow. All the black waiters and everything. No reaction at all.
Hmm.
I mean, it was very passive.
Mm-hmm. From the waiter.
Yeah.
What about Carmichael?
Well, I think they were sort of upset that that would take place, but it didn't interrupt the evening too much.
Martin Luther King wasn't one of their favorites.
No.
Do you know the story about... Woodson leaving Bell Aircraft?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't recall that at all.
Okay. Well, there's a story that he announced that he had a job with Howard Hughes.
And, I don't remember that.
But apparently he didn't have a job, that he just wanted out.
Doesn't register.
From everything I can gather, though, he really did a good job of running the plant.
Very good.
There.
His son-in-law was Ted Nolan.
Oh, okay.
And who's Ted Nolan?
Well, he was up here at Bell in the
manufacturing. Right.
Uh-huh.
And he married Woodson's daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. N-O-W-L-A-N?
Nolan,
N-O-L-A-N.
N-O-L-A-N, yeah.
N-O-L-A-N, Ted Nolan.
Mm-hmm. What about Carl Culver? He was new to the company when he came in 44.
He was a colonel in the Air Force and retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who Larry Bell who recommended Culver, but he was supposed to be a very important person in the whole organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was killed, but... I can't tell you who recommended him or anything else.
Did you work at all closely with him?
No.
Okay.
No, that was later.
Uh-huh. By that point, you were still in Marietta, though, at that point, weren't you?
Part of the time.
Mm-hmm. It's just that are you getting so compartmentalized as it gets so big that there's less contact with other people?
Well, I worked closely with Al Leowolf.
Al?
Leowolf. L-E-O-W-O-L-F.
Oh, okay. Right.
Leowolf.
Right.
And he was the chief financial officer mm-hmm. at Marietta at the time, and I would work closely with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed until the plant was closed.
Hmm. Where did Wolf come from? Was
who?
Leo Wolf. Where did he come from? Was he Southern?
Al Leo Wolf. Yeah. He was from Niagara Falls.
Was he?
Yeah.
Now, is Leo Wolf the last name?
Yes, L-E-O-W-O-L-F.
Oh, okay. All
Leo
right.
Wolf.
Okay. And Al is the first name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got it now.
He,
And he was from Niagara Falls?
Mm-hmm. When I was in Buffalo, he was over me in Buffalo, and then when mm-hmm. he moved to, he brought me down occasionally,
mm-hmm.
you know, back and forth I go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in charge of all financial activities at
right.
Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about him.
Very capable in his profession as mm-hmm. a financial. He had a wonderful personality. He could work well with people and could organize
mm-hmm.
properly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He had a very tragic life because his wife was ill and he later committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Not while he was working, but this is mm-hmm. after
yeah.
after he was out of Bell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did he stay down there?
Yeah.
Did he stay down
there? He was permanently moved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. What kind of a budget did you have?
I mean,
how much money were y'all handling for the company?
It was subtle. Were you talking about it this period?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you want to make a comparison, when you started in 1940, it must have been a very tiny budget compared to what it would become.
Well, we had over 65,000 employees,
mm-hmm.
including Buffalo, Georgia, and Vermont,
right.
Burlington, Vermont.
A huge payroll.
Payroll was something. Mm-hmm. And it was my job particularly to obtain V loans to finance all of this. So I worked
mm-hmm.
a lot with the banks
mm-hmm.
in New York. And we had substantial budgets. I can't recall exact figures right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask another type of a question. I know that the local banks in Marietta had never seen anything like mm-hmm. what they experienced in World War II. They suddenly have to keep longer hours and have long lines of all the workers coming in on payday. Could you say a little bit about your relationship with the local banks?
Oh, it was very good.
Was it?
As I recall, Robinson? Was it? Maybe my wife can help.
Robinson.
I think he was the head of one of the banks.
Okay.
He was, they had an advisory board.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to find out while you knew you were coming.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who was on it, but there were, I think, Robinson. Who was with American Express at? Kay?
Yeah?
We need you.
Okay.
Robinson, I think, was Georgia Trust.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, I was trying to think that Ed Massey was the president of mm-hmm. the First National Bank of Cobb County.
We worked with mostly the Atlanta banks.
Okay.
At the beginning.
Sure. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I know we had Lou Sperry, mm-hmm. who was at Bell here,
mm-hmm.
and he was brought in by some of the banks to oversee all our V loans. We had substantial V loans.
Mm-hmm.
But
so it's really the downtown Atlanta banks that
yes.
had the expertise to handle the business of a large corporation.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, but, and I know that the local banks had to grow.
We need some expert advice. This is Dr. Scott.
I don't know if you're going to get that back.
Oh, hi.
Hello, Dr. Scott.
Good to meet you.
Thank you. It's nice to meet you.
You're the history. Oops. Good to meet somebody from Marietta.
You live right in Marietta?
I do. Yeah. I live on Atlanta Street, right across from the Confederate Cemetery.
Well, you're way out.
Way out?
But used to be. You were outside. Yeah.
Well, I suppose. Where Lucius Clay grew up is about two doors from where we are.
I know exactly where that is. In fact, I live just up the street from there.
Is that right?
On Atlanta Street.
Did you really?
Yeah. Where Waterman Street runs in?
Okay, yeah, going toward, well, yeah,
going
we would be further out than going toward town. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's very close to us.
Lived most of my life right there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Which house was it?
It isn't even there anymore. I think, I don't know what's there now, but it's some civic building or some.
Okay.
Some.
So if you were going toward town on Atlanta Street.
And
on the left.
Just across, almost right across the street from where Waterman Street comes in.
Okay. Well, there's not anything right there now. I know.
We drove through Atlanta, well, not this time, but last time we were there, a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Changed.
We took the old route purposely, you know, Kennesaw Avenue and then continuing from there.
Right. Well, Kennesaw Avenue, I guess, looks fairly similar to the way it would have looked, doesn't it?
Except all that part.
If you go too far out.
Up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. To correct your notes, it was November 25th, 1943.
All right.
What's 43?
That's when we were married.
44.
Huh?
44.
Was it? That's what I told him, but I thought...
Yeah. Right. No, you said 44.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's 44.
Okay. All right.
You were right to begin with.
Yeah.
So you spent, I guess you were born in Marietta then, or at least grew up in Marietta.
Well, I was born in Cartersville, Georgia, at my grandmother's.
In Cartersville.
And my mother's from Cartersville, yeah.
Okay.
But I lived a lot of my life in Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
Well, until we were married, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, while you we brought you in to ask about banks,
yeah.
About
who
what?
Was it Robinson, the bank?
Mr. Jim Robinson.
Jim Robinson,
First National Bank.
What was it? Third.
First National Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't he the one that his son is at the American Express? Was.
I think I can't be really definite about that. He was
anyway. We worked at Atlanta Bank.
He was a great man, though.
Mm-hmm. great in what sense?
Oh, he was just an all-around honest man you knew you could trust.
Mm-hmm.
He was good-looking, he was pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And his son, I think, followed pretty well in his footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
He was with the bank until he went with, who was it you think he went with?
American
Express.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He knows Vicki Chastain.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Vicki and Joe?
Sure. Yeah. Everybody in Marietta knows.
Then you probably know Ellen and Ryan Francis. He's been with the bank a long time.
Ryan Francis, yeah. Sure.
Because mm-hmm. Ellen is Vicki's sister.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't know that.
And their mother was my best friend.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Nell Franklin,
Nell
and
John Franklin.
This is the closing
of the ring,
isn't it? I'd say so.
This is the closing of the ring.
So. Well,
I don't know if you've been there long enough to have known Nell and John Franklin.
Well, I didn't know them, I've been there for 30 years now.
Sid Clotfelter?
Yeah, I did an oral history with him about 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And he's a brother of Vickers. He's an uncle of Vickers.
You're right. Yeah, he's a very nice man. He's done a lot for our institution. I teach at Kennesaw State.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, so
he
was on the foundation there for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dr. Scott's wife is from Buffalo.
Was that
right? Right.
Friends,
she was born here, and they moved in 1955 to Marietta. So she grew up in Marietta. But,
did she?
Was from Buffalo.
She's got your accent. I mean, you know, she went at 10 years old. She was born at Mercy Hospital in South Buffalo.
I don't even think I have an accent anymore. We came in the airport last week and Bill was getting the car, it was raining, and he said, you got the bag, so I went in and just, Porter was standing there, and I said, how would you like to get some bags by me? And he said, what part of Georgia are you from? And he had been born in Marietta.
Oh, is that right?
You know, Sid Clatfelder's father was a teacher.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Sort of a country school teacher.
Well, I understand your father was on the city council in Marietta.
Right.
I told him about the story with Rick Blair arresting him.
Yeah, but we didn't get that on the tape, so maybe we ought to do that again.
Oh, you didn't get it?
No, that was before we got started on the tape. So I think that'd be a good idea to tell that story about you got married in November of 1944, and was this at a reception? Or?
I'll let Kay tell
the story.
No, you tell it. You're doing the tape.
It was a reception for our impending wedding, and they had guests in for cocktails and things. And while we're participating in the discussion, in walked a couple of policemen from Marietta Police Department, and they wanted to know if there was a William Giesel from Buffalo, New York present. And I said, yes, sir, I am. And they said, you're wanted for kidnapping. And you better come with us. So I walked out the door, and Kay said, Rip Blair, you can't do this to him. You can't do this. And I said, well, I'll go. So I went out with him. I went out with him, and we rode around the block a couple of times, and they said, all right, we'll let you escape now. So I escaped and walked back to the house, and that was it. But I think you were concerned, weren't you, that I might be in jail?
Well, I was a little disappointed you just got up and left without fight.
Fight the police.
But you told him Rip Blair was mayor.
He was mayor at the time.
Right.
And I knew him well enough to know that if he thought it was funny, that he'd let him leave him in jail overnight.
Oh.
I just knew it.
But what did they say they arrested you for?
Kidnapping.
And then
I kidnapped a Southern Belle.
I see.
They didn't like that.
I see. That's what happens when the Northerners start
That's
coming
right.
in. Was there any kind of, obviously you all hit it off, but was there any kind of a cultural shock when you all started dating or anything?
We actually started in Washington, so we met about halfway.
I see.
I already told him it was north of Mason-Dixon line. Yeah.
I see. So that made it all right,
yeah.
I guess. And so you were secretary, Ms. Giesel, for Captain Collins. How long were you secretary for him?
What, about 4 years? Maybe not even that long, 3 years.
3 years.
3 years, maybe.
There were quite a few women who were working at the Bell Aircraft plant.
Here's a picture. I got it.
You have a picture of it? We've done some interviews with some of them that were there.
Have you?
We're trying to do as many interviews.
Mary Acuff, is she still living?
I don't know. I remember very well. She was Mr. Woodson's secretary. Not Woodson. She was before him.
Who?
She was Al Leowitz's secretary.
Acuff?
Al Leowitz.
Oh, okay.
That's who I told
you
about.
What was it like working at the Bell plant?
It was wonderful. I mean, it was an absolute new world for anybody who lived in that part of the country, you know. And it was amazing how they really sort of melded into that atmosphere without making so many people mad. And a lot of people were against bringing the plant there.
Really?
Marietta was a town of like 10,000 people. And in like 3 years, it was 30,000. And everybody didn't want it, but people came from all over the United States and, you know, gave jobs to everybody around the place, and everything was booming as far as the economy was concerned. To see the whole United States mail right there, very interesting.
This is from the Bell Ringer.
Yep.
And, okay. See Catherine Lee. And,
the other pictures.
And then some others here.
You probably interviewed some of them.
Well, no, I haven't interviewed any of these. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to be able to track them all down now.
And, if they're living.
See how many you are.
You know who should still be living that you should interview is Dr. Curson's.
But she isn't living.
You remember her?
Yeah, I remember her.
She was a telephone operator. She knew more about anything than anybody about.
I imagine so.
She knew where everybody was going and when they're coming back.
Still running. Do you know who some of the people were who were against the plant coming into Marietta?
Oh, I couldn't really give you names. I remember there were some maiden sisters who had property near that. And it was from an old Marietta family, and they really raised up, you know, in arms.
When their property was taken for the plant?
When it was, their property wasn't taken, but they were. The gardener sister was her name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't anything, I mean, they, you know, nobody could do anything about it once it was decided to build the plant there.
Right.
So they really, once the plant was built and everything, then there was no problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing was, you know, the blacks were completely separated from the whites, even their own restaurant and everything.
Right.
And that probably was the big change that started right there.
You think so?
Working together. Well, they were working side by side on assembly lines and everything else.
Okay, yeah. That's really
good. Read what it said.
Marietta's go-getter mayor, L.M. Rip Blair, this is from the Bell Ringer. His clear foresight and administrative ability was largely responsible for the lack of confusion in the process of Marietta's skyrocket development.
That's really true.
Well, but Jimmy Carmichael was a great part of that, too, because he was the one with the Sabois face. Jimmy Carmichael.
Oh, you interviewed somebody from the Carmichael.
Well, I talked to his sister, both of his sisters. We've got
interviews. Williams and Peggy?
Right. And Ms. Williams died about a year ago.
You know, I was thinking about her and wondering.
Within the last year, I think.
I don't know if somebody
didn't
let me know that.
Did you see a picture of Cannon?
I think it has. It's been about a year.
Peggy was one of my best friends.
Looks
young. My younger sister.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Can't get on.
Well, they always lived a life for everybody else. No,
Peggy did?
No, Will May.
Oh, Will May did. Mm-hmm. She was a very nice lady.
Wonderful.
I talked to her years and years ago, I guess.
And she died about a year ago, huh?
I think it was about a year ago.
And, I have to talk to my contacts down there.
The old Carmichael house out in the log cabin community has just been torn down in the last 2 or 3 months.
Up on the hill?
Right. All that property was sold. And the store, too, was torn down.
What about that restaurant up there?
The restaurant where you're talking about where Jimmy Carmichael lived, it's still going.
Is it?
It's still there.
What was the name of that?
Maximilian.
No, there's another one.
You mean up on Church Street?
No, the one that was way out.
Oh, Aunt Fanny's cabin.
Yeah.
Aunt Fanny's? Is that what you're talking about?
Is that still there?
It's no longer. Let me see if I can. But there's also the house that right at the end of what is Dobbins now, that where Jimmy Carmichael lived until. I guess sometime during the war he moved out to right across from the Rip Blair.
Yeah, from Castle Avenue.
Yeah, Right. But both of those houses are still there. Yeah, there's a lawyer from Atlanta named Tom Watson Brown that lives in the Carmichael house on Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
He's a character.
What's his name?
Tom Watson Brown. He's like, Tom Watson was the demagogue, politician, senator from Georgia, a populist. And this is, I guess, like a great nephew or something like that. Mm-hmm. That still got the family name of Tom Watson.
Uh-huh.
And very much interested in history and on the board of the Atlanta Historical Society and so on. But he bought that house and... actually, I think the house sold for a lot cheaper than people thought it would go for.
Which house is it?
The house on Cherokee, that was the McNeil house. And,
oh, I know.
And then Jimmy Carmichael lived in from maybe 44 for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And then it went through several owners.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the owners put just a tremendously long wing that just destroyed the architectural integrity of the house.
Oh, shame.
It's been changed a great deal over the years.
I hate to hear that.
And, well, Rip Blair's house is now, the house is still being used as the front for a development of, they've taken all that back property and developed houses back through there.
Tell me, is
really
Dan Blair still living, or what's he doing?
I asked him that.
Is who?
Dan Blair, the son.
Dan, I don't know. I know Barbara. And she's still doing things.
I've forgotten her barren name.
Renshaw. She married Jack Renshaw, who was from Buffalo and moved down there. Another one of those northerners who came south. They're living out at the new Marietta Country Club now.
And I hear the old Marietta Country Club really is something now.
Well, it's
the convention center, is it?
It's the Marietta Convention Center. It's been a very controversial center.
Has it?
Well, it's been controversial, and first of all, in the fact that the city's in the hotel business, and secondly, that it took it the longest time to make a profit. And but fortunately, for the last 8 months, it's made a profit.
Doing all right now.
Yeah, it's doing, at least for the time being. And the house that is next to it, that was Colonel Brumby's house back when there was the Georgia Military Institute on it.
Chili Tresmont, remember?
What?
Yeah.
Chili Tresmont?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that house is, the city owns that now too, and they've renovated it and tried to bring back some gardens around it. And
what are they using it for?
Well, just for receptions and things of that sort. And actually, there's been a good deal of controversy about that house too and how it ought to be used.
Yeah,
I guess city politics always has a good deal of controversy to it.
Any politics.
Yeah, but you were mentioning earlier controversy over the plant coming in the first place. There had to be kind of a shock on the part of people in Marietta when so many people from other parts of the country came in.
Well, it was all the shock was while they were deciding whether or not to let it come.
Mm-hmm.
And people were screaming and yelling some.
Mm-hmm.
But once it was decided that it was a, fait accompli, then people were all right.
Mm-hmm.
And, it changed the town, there's no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely. But your memories are of harmonious relationships as people came in.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a lot of people made a lot of money in Marietta.
They sure did.
Renting out space and
what
have you. Did the house that you were living in, how many people took in boarders during that time? Was it?
I suppose a lot did, because they just took housing anywhere they could get it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot stayed in Atlanta.
Right.
A lot of people came
right.
from Atlanta.
Yeah,
like they came from towns all around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they had to get the people.
Mm-hmm.
And from all over the United States they came.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them stayed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Jimmy Carmichael before all of this?
He was a brother of one of my best friends. In
Is
fact,
that right?
He was the cause of my going to work for Captain Collins.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see things, happening and going on, and I was working for a stock and bond brokerage firm, secretary of one of the partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Daddy, I've got that good job that day. And he said, Daddy was very conservative. You have a good job where you are and working for nice men and nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I said, you care if I talk to Jimmy Carmichael? And he said, no, go ahead and talk to him.
Uh-huh.
So it was through Jimmy that I went there.
Uh-huh. Jimmy Carmichael must have helped a lot of local people get a job out of the plant.
He was wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had broken his back when he was in high school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And could always cripple after that.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up graduating from Emory University and became a very fine lawyer and then got into all kind of things.
Is it making noise again?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not as bad.
Yeah. Maybe it got rattled on the plane trip. I don't know. But, I'm trying to figure out how to
There you go. Maybe we get your lady.
Don't leave it like that. You must have been, did you go to Marietta High School?
Mm-hmm.
So you must have been, what, 2 or 3 years behind Jimmy Carmichael in school, I guess.
I think Jimmy was, he had graduated the year before I went in. I graduated in 33.
Okay. Yeah. So he would have been just about through Emory by the time you graduated.
Right.
Then.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so his brother, let's see, you said you were good friends of his brother?
His sister. No, he had no brother, it was just the two.
Right.
And
which one, was it Peggy that you were the best friend?
No, and Will May was a sister, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Will May Williams and Peggy were the girls, and Jimmy was the woman's son.
Mm-hmm. Which of the sisters were you the closer to Peggy?
Mm-hmm. She was my age.
Was she the youngest of the three?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so she was in your class?
Well, I was the oldest, and then Jimmy and then Peggy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have an interview with Jake Ward. I don't know whether you remember him or not.
Very well.
But, yeah,
he boyfriend.
Was, oh, really? Really?
I know.
For a short time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I did an interview with him four or five years ago. And he was telling me about Jimmy Carmichael. They were real good friends. And
real close friends.
And he's really telling me how brilliant Carmichael was.
He was.
That he had vision, you know, that maybe...
And so was Jake Ward.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not surprised.
I understand he's having a building named for him at Emory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he deserves it.
I just heard that from another friend.
I didn't know that. But he...
So when you interview him, say hello.
Well, no, I interviewed him about 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, I thought you said you were going.
He was telling me how he would used to travel around with Jimmy Carmichael when they go out when Carmichael was in the legislature and they'd go campaigning, and Carmichael was still in his 20s at this time, but everybody seemed to defer to him, that the older legislators were come up and ask him, what do you think about so and so?
Well, he was a very I don't know if I want the word compelling. He did establish, confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a wonderful speaker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've read a few of his speeches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you knew Jimmy very well.
Ooh.
Jimmy Carmichael.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the lawyer? Neil?
There was a Neil.
Did you ever interview anybody that was in the legal end of Bell?
No. The last name was Neil?
Neil, as I recall. Mm-hmm. He was a great tennis player.
Hmm.
Neil.
He was a friend of Jimmy's, too.
Yeah, very good.
N-E-A-L?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First name, you know?
Should know. It's probably in those books somewhere.
I don't know.
He was... He was sort of different. He was a different type from Jimmy, completely, but a smart lawyer. Had sort of strange personality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But well known in Atlanta, actually, for his tennis and legal.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Jimmy Carmichael was originally the counsel for the party.
Yeah. But I think Neil worked closely with Jimmy.
Okay.
Neil was at the plant.
Who?
In
Neil?
The legal department, wasn't he?
Who?
Neil.
No, I don't think so.
He stayed in Atlanta?
I think so.
You know, something we haven't asked is about your relationship with Larry Bell and what you knew about him. I mean, did people have a relationship with Larry Bell that worked at the plant?
Well, it was very close.
Was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And... over a period of years, during the war, my mother worked with his wife on the Russian relief, which was...
Really?
Mm-hmm. And she was in Jamestown, and Mrs. Bell was here in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So Larry never had any children, and he always was very, very interested in our children.
Mm-hmm.
And We had a daughter that was burned very badly, and he was very upset and very concerned about it. And in his will, when he died, he left instructions for this plastic surgeon in New York City to come and see her and make sure that everything had been done that could have been done. And he had had this surgeon himself when he was in an automobile accident. But he was, I have worked with a lot of people, and I would say he had great foresight. He had great vision, and could tie his timing for everything was perfect. I mean, I would say he had great capability as far as leadership. He was a good salesman. He was completely taken back by the fact that he never got that plant back. When they gave it to Lockheed, I think that was the end of Larry Bell.
Really?
Because he had a great devotion for that plant. And when they the government awarded it to Lockheed, after we closed it, he was very despondent.
Can I just finish that one thing? When the plant was, you know, just a plant in Buffalo, and still as of a size he could, he walked through the plant every single day and spoke to the workers, and, you know, and they all just, you know, loved him. And he loved his workers, particularly his test pilots.
How much time did he spend in Marietta? Did he come down at all? I mean, he came down a number of times, I know, but was
I can't tell you. I would say it was quite frequent during the height of all the activity. But he would became very obsessed with flying, so he would always take the train.
Right, that's what I'd heard. That's unusual for somebody building an aircraft company, isn't it?
He said he knew too much about them.
What was that?
That he
no, took... No, that. What did you say?
He said he knew too much about them.
Yeah. Did his brother get killed?
Yeah.
His first brother, his second brother died in Nashville.
Yeah. Back, way back in 1913, the first brother got killed.
But I was with him, and I traveled quite a bit with him. We were... having a helicopter demonstration in Atlantic City. And after that, we went to Washington, and he was taken very ill in Washington. And I got to know him quite well during that trip, I'll tell you. But I would say one of the most wonderful men I could ever think of.
You know, I'd never heard that story that Bell might have been interested in getting the plant back with the Korean War.
He was completely divested.
I never heard that story.
You didn't?
Either, no.
Why didn't they give it back to him?
Never could find a politics. As a matter of fact, maybe you don't know it. Well, you probably know it. we came within that far of owning Lockheed.
Is that right? When was that?
It'd be in the early 60s, at the L-1011 crisis.
It was,
in the
60s.
Yeah, okay.
As a matter of fact, we had Bill Miller and Harvey Gaylord had offices in the Lockheed plant in Burbank. And everything was all set, and then Miller, at the last minute, canceled it because of that litigation they had in the shipyard in Seattle. I don't know whether that was part of the...
But Bill, could I just ask, when was this question of getting the plant back an issue? In the 50s? Or what time?
Toward the end of the 50s.
This was the Korean War. It's 51 that Lockheed came in.
51 they came in?
Well, then it had to be earlier.
Yeah, it was late 40s.
I mean, it would have been an alternative that he would have put helicopters down there rather than Texas?
No, it was to... it had to be in the early 50s.
Well, January of 50.
When did Lockheed take over?
I believe it's January of 51 that Lockheed...
Oh, it was before that.
Of course, the Korean War broke out in June of 1950, and then the Air Force wanted the plant to reopen to, I guess, take those B-29s out of mothballs to begin with.
Oh, that's okay. I got it.
And it would have been logical for Bell
to
come back in and do it.
It was completely...
And, you know, of course, Jimmy Carmichael was brought from Scripto to come back and reopen the plant, and did so. You know, he was the general manager for the first year that Lockheed.
I didn't realize that.
And then Dan Halton was his assistant.
Oh, I know Dan very well.
While Jimmy Carmichael was running the plant for a year, he just took a leave of absence from Scripto. He really built Scripto into an international corporation. And... So he took a leave of absence, but he was on the board of directors of Lockheed for the rest of his life after that.
Is Dan Halton still living?
No.
He died.
Mm-hmm. He was a great person.
He was going out with Carmichael's wife.
With what?
His widow.
Widow.
Really? Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just a short time, I think.
Uh-huh.
Last time we saw Dan Halton.
I think they were more just really good friends.
Well,
Because they had been before Jimmy died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think part of Lockheed coming in there was the fact that Carmichael was willing to come back and open the plant.
Well, I think Larry would have taken Carmichael. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it was political.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be.
Well, yeah.
It
I mean,
was,
it would,
it, it I had, know it was.
Well, everything was political, for sure.
Yeah.
I just wondered if, let's say, Truman was president, who was the... Secretary of Defense.
I can't remember. I know we had Truman up here.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Truman came to
visit
the plant here.
Yeah.
Some pictures in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's something that I'd be worth researching.
You look into it.
See what I can find out.
Yeah.
I'd like to know.
Why Bell didn't come back in. I just wonder if it had anything to do with all those labor troubles they had up here after
Could have been.
The war.
I don't know the reason. I know he was in shock.
I think Bell was very proud of the fact that he had something to do with the economic recovery of the South.
Right.
And he certainly would have been a logical one to have come back in, you would think.
He thought so.
Yeah.
Was that a bid? Was it a bid? Was there just a decision, huh?
Apparently, there was a decision by the Defense Department to award the facility. It was owned by the government.
Right.
Award. And whether Boeing or Lockheed or Bell or the participants, I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is Lockheed got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Bell was unhappy.
You know, Bell was apparently very unhappy that the plant didn't really get any awards for its production during World War II.
We built more than Boeing.
Yeah.
We didn't get any.